your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You know, Roost is also not a TM in Pokemon Sword.
That's so dumb. Really?
I agree. It's stupid.
Who do you want to give Roost to?
I wanted to give it to Corviknight.
Oh, yeah.
He's a tanky guy. I want to teach him Brave Bird and then Roost him back up.
You move tutor. If he doesn't have Roost and it was a level up move.
It wasn't, though. It only is an egg move for Corviknight.
Oh, it's only an egg move.
I think.
And you don't want to do...
At least it's
hatch.
Not a level up move. Maybe he can't learn it at all. I just thought that he could.
I hate egg moves. I hate it.
They're so stupid.
It's so stupid. It's why we don't have a Pokemon channel. It's literally because of egg moves.
If we played more Scarlet and Violet, you could do the picnic thing. Apparently, I've never done the picnic thing. But you can do the picnic thing to teach him egg moves.
I've never done the picnic thing either to do egg moves either.
You put him in a picnic with the Pokemon that you would have bred them with that only knows that one move. You have to delete all the other moves, apparently. This is what I read on Google. And then they'll learn the egg move. They'll learn the...
Wait, so...
If I put Umbreon in with another Mon that has Curse...
Any other Mon with Curse.
I don't know if it has to be one that could have bred with it.
Oh, okay, whatever. Yeah.
But, and then you delete all the other moves besides Curse, you'll be able to... Teacher Umbreon Curse, apparently. It's like a friend thing. They like the Pokemon become friends, and then your Pokemon teaches the Umbreon Curse.
Oh, so you don't get a new Mon with the
You don't
thing.
Get a new Mon. You teach your Pokemon the egg move. Yeah, which is why it's cool.
Oh, that's way cooler. Because
then I can teach my shiny Umbreon the egg move that I wouldn't be able to have my shiny Umbreon get otherwise.
Oh, yeah, I've never done that. And there's been a lot of times where I feel like I wanted that in a Mon.
Look into picnicking.
Well, I'm going to look into picnicking, yeah.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about more cards that we like in CEDH. You have a little bit of a list?
Yeah, we got a list. I figured that we'd take a little bit of a... Well, this was your idea, actually. You figured that we should take a little bit of a sneak peek at... Edge of Eternities too,
because we should really, begin edging. Yeah, that's true.
I think so. Yeah, because that's really been what's on like everyone's mind, and I know that we've got the full set review coming out next week, but I feel like it's okay to take a little glimpse into the Edge Beyond.
We've seen a couple of things. We're gonna start. A couple ones. I want to talk about Tezzeret. Tezzeret.
That's
I feel
really
like is the first
thing,
one.
Yeah,
that one was the first one that got spoiled. Maybe not the first one, but like the first good card that got spoiled from the set.
And I feel like he's been out for forever at this point now.
I haven't played with him yet. I haven't tested him with him yet or anything like that. But I think he's good.
And I think that our personal rule is that as long as the card is spoiled, you can proxy it and play it in casual settings.
Right, yeah. Should I pull it up and figure out what it does?
I have a Scryfall tab open.
You do? Okay. Yeah, you didn't have it out, so I wasn't sure.
No, I totally understand that, yeah. I also forgot my line at the beginning of the podcast. Could you see my existential crisis I forgot what I was supposed to say?
I'm glad you remembered it.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing such a good job this week. All right, Tezzeret is the Cruel Captain now. He's 3 generic mana for a 4 loyalty planeswalker with whenever an artifact you control enters, put a loyalty counter on Tezzeret. He's got a 0 ability that lets you untap target artifact or creature. If it's an artifact creature, put a +1/+1 counter on it. For a -3 loyalty, you can search your library for an artifact card with mana value 1 or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle. And for -7 loyalty, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of combat on your turn, put 3 +1/+1 counters on target artifact you control. If it's not a creature, it becomes a 0/0 robot artifact creature.
Yeah, this one, I feel like it does a lot of things that are like interesting for CDH, weirdly. The main ones that I'm looking at, number one, is obviously the tutor. Finding any 1-drop or 0-drop artifact?
I think it's just 1 or less, actually.
1 or less?
Mana value 1 or less.
It's an artifact, so we can find an S%, no? But
exactly, unlike Urza Saga, which cares about the mana cost.
It's specifically 1 or 0, but this is 1 mana value or less. So it can find S%, no? It can find Sol Ring and Mana Vault. It can find Lion's Eye Diamond. I mean, it can find a whole slew of things. So I think if you have a combo piece in your deck that is findable by this Tezzeret, I think it's already pretty considerable. And then even if you don't, the this might just be like a fine card because the plus ability to untap an artifact specifically, that feels really good right now. There are a lot of decks that are trying to untap the One Ring a whole bunch of times, and this is another thing that does that. Not only does it untap the One Ring, so you can tap it again to draw more cards, but it can also minus to find one of the keys, the Manifold keys or the Voltaic keys.
That's which, true.
There's been like a Rog side build recently that's kind of like more in on like the One Ring and like untapping the One Ring a bunch. I don't know if that deck is going to try this. I'm trying the key version now in Rog'Sai. I feel like I kind of want this Tezzeret. Three is a lot, but it does like everything that that One Ring deck is trying to do.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Just to echo what you said about like combo pieces, if you're playing Sensei's Divining Top in your deck. Walking Ballista, right? Like it finds all of these things that so many decks just want to be able to have. And I've even considered it for a Tali just because like it can go get your Mana Vault and then on the next turn, it lets you use Mana Vault and untap Mana Vault to get you at least five colorless mana to just need red for Chunky after that.
The issues with the card is, one, it's a Planeswalker. Planeswalkers are a little bit less good in Commander normally because they're easily attacked. But the good part about Tezzeret is I think both of the effects are just fine effects right away. If you get to, for three mana, untap your One Ring after you've already drawn three cards, untap it, draw another four, you've now kind of drawn like seven cards out of nowhere. That's going to feel really good. If you can do it to find one of the keys or one of the combo pieces right away, like its first ability is already, I think, like close enough. Three mana is kind of a lot for either one of those abilities. The Voltaic Keys can untap the artifact for two total mana. You can find a one drop for, there's got to be a card that can find a one drop or less for less mana than three. Just like a Demonic Theater or,
You know what? There is going to be another one that we'll also talk about in the set review next week, too.
This set has a couple of tutors. But yeah, so I think those two things specifically are why it's going to be interesting in CDH. Though, whenever you play an artifact, put a loyalty counter on it, I don't think that's going to be particularly relevant. Sometimes you'll be able to get it out of attacking range if you sequence it correctly. That'll be fine.
Some decks, like the thing that you search for is going to let you cast it right away and then give you the counter that you need.
And then the Karnstruck, making the Karnstrucks, that's also rarely going to be relevant. I think almost always. The only situation is if you're already at a low loyalty and you can't untap something again and you want to keep it around. Like, there'll be weird situations where you have to make a Karnstruck. In 1v1, that ability, it does make Karnstrucks, right? Am I saying that right?
No, it doesn't make Karnstrucks at all. Yeah, you put three +1/+1 counters on an artifact you control, and if it's not a creature, it becomes a robot.
So it doesn't even make a body, it just makes something bigger. So you're actually not going to do that. I'm sorry. I completely misunderstood what this does. Okay.
I know, because I thought for a second, well, maybe there's a way, like, you can technically get infinite of these emblems if you're going through the Hullbreaker horror loop.
And then,
with it in play, is that, like, a win condition? Now, like, your Mox Amber and stuff that you've been looping with can be big, but then they get...
There's no haste or anything?
There's no haste or anything, right?
Huh.
So, okay. So I think it's really just, like, the two main abilities. If you have a reason to want to untap your Bloom Tenders or your Mana Vaults or something like that.
Honestly, it seems really good in Sisse, though. It offers no color pips. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of other things that untap something for three mana, a bunch of Planeswalkers that cost pips. But you're right. It does do what Sisse wants to do.
I think it's like one of those things where if you already have your pips and you already don't have an issue because you have like Agatha Soul Cauldron or something, like you can include this in your chain just to get like another untap and then free yourself up of some other stuff that comes up then too.
Yes, I understand what you're going with, but with Sisse, there would be no reason to just get a free other untap unless it's adding something to your board, and Tezzeret doesn't add anything to the Sisse plan.
I guess that's true,
It lets you do it one more time, but it doesn't allow you to make Sisse a little bit bigger as you go or something
like
that.
Yeah, because it's the untapping of Gaia's Cradle that lets you go off with extra mana so that when you chain your Derevi and into Deadpool and stuff, that's why it works.
Right, but it could theoretically, it allows your extra Gaia's Cradle mana to go into this so that you can tap Bloom Tender, untap it, tap Bloom Tender again right away, and then go find Teferi and then the rest of your win or something like that. It allows you to use your like extra generic mana and put it in your extra generic mana into the Tezzeret and then sort of like filter that generic mana into an untapping of a creature again.
Is that good?
I don't know how good that sounds. I'm not sure. It doesn't sound very good. So I don't know about Sisse, but it's considerable at least. It's at least considerable in Sisse. It's considerable in the key version of Rog'Sai or the key version of any deck who's trying to One Ring untap over and over again.
Any deck that's playing keys or trying to untap.
And then if you have a combo piece that it can tutor for, I think it's also worth putting in your deck because it does that and then also other shit. So I think Tezzeret's going to be good.
I think so too. Yeah, I think this is going to be an insane card for CEDH. There's probably less decks that will end up playing it than I think right now, because I feel like right now it goes in a lot of decks.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a little bit of time, or it's going to take a little bit of testing to figure out exactly like where this is going to settle.
Yeah, if we were to examine the top... Sorry, I cut you off.
No, I... No, you
if
go.
We go from the top, Blue Farm probably doesn't play this.
I don't think so, no.
Kinnan, I don't think Kinnan really wants this.
I feel like it's close for Kinnan.
Yeah.
It's almost a way to find Basalt Monolith.
You can find the other key. What's the other key? Isn't there the one that you can crack? I don't know, it's not a key, but you can crack it to find a land or a thing that makes a
is
mana.
Is Moon Silver Key two mana and the activation's one mana?
Can we check
that?
You're probably right about that.
Two mana, one to activate, yeah.
You know what? I am weirdly thinking of it in Yoshimaru Thrasios, a deck that I've been playing a little bit. As of right now, it's been on the channel one time, and if I remember correctly, I did Mystic Grimoire things to try to not die to an Itali, and that's kind of all. It didn't do the Yoshimaru Thrasios thing, but it can find Candelabra of Tanos, which
that's
is a
cool.
very important piece of the deck. And the deck also does play the One Ring. It can untap the One Ring. It doesn't untap a land, Tezzeret. If it untapped a land, I would say, you know, yeah, we're getting it in there.
Ooh, yum.
Right, yum. But maybe Yoshimaru Thrasios. I'm not sure. What are the other top decks right now? Timna Thrasios. Not Timna Thrasios.
I don't think Timna Thrasios wants
it. Not Timna Thrasios.
I think this actually supports more tier 2 decks than the top decks in reality.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Your Elshas and stuff that
big
actively
time.
Want your Sensei's tops, or maybe even Crick. I know that you can't use Crick to like cheapen it, but doesn't Crick need Sensei's top for some of its combos too?
Probably, yeah.
I don't know, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff like that I feel like you might want it.
Yeah, it finds Lion's Eye Diamond, so if you're doing Breach stuff, it's also, I mean, 3 mana to find Lion's Eye Diamonds is not very good, but it's something, you know? There was one more deck that I was thinking about Savala. We just had Savala on the channel. Savala hasn't seen a much play recently, but it feels great in Savala.
That one is interesting because it does let you just have like this untap chain.
Yeah.
And then you go find Phyrexian Dreadnought with its minus ability.
That's good. You know?
Oh, dude, this is a Curie card. You put this in Curie.
Big time.
And then that way, that's just another way to find your big combo.
And those are great cards, new cards for CDH, cards that help out the tier 2 and tier 3 decks. I think that's
a
great
thing.
So, yeah. So this card may not see play in the very best decks of the format, but it might see play in the tier 2 decks, which is cool.
Yeah, I definitely like that, yeah.
Should we talk about another card?
Let's talk about another Edge of Eternities card that we should talk about, but I'm not going to lie, I have no idea what the name of the card is.
Is it the other tutor?
I was going to bring up the Gaia's Cradle.
The Gaia's Cradle land. Yeah, we should talk about the Gaia's Cradle land.
It's so funny. So when you go to Scryfall and you click on sets, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 sets that appear before Edge of Eternities.
What are they? Like
Marvel Spider-Man, Marvel Universe, which has got to be the arena cards.
Yeah.
Marvel's Spider-Man Eternal, which now I have no idea what that is. Maybe one of them is a commander set.
Do we have Spider-Man commander cards? Click that link.
Hold up. Yeah, Marvel Universe.
Let's deviate real
quick. Let's see what this is. Zero cards were found.
All right.
Great. All right. Sets. Marvel Spider-Man Eternal.
Anything in there?
Oh, yeah. This is like where our Sensational Spider-Man and Venom and
the ones we've already seen.
Yeah, these ones that we've already seen.
Have we talked about how Doc Ock is 7 mana?
That's incredibly frustrating.
Oh my god. Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? They were channeling Gristlebrand when they made this.
They had to have done that on purpose to purposefully enrage creators into making content about it.
That's so stupid.
There's no other reason. You can't do that on accident.
You can't do that on accident.
That has to be purposeful.
Maybe they were like, well, he's already bad. We can't make him 8 mana.
Make him better.
I would have made him 6 mana, at least in that case. Like, I don't want to make it so laughably insulting.
Yeah.
That it's that close. I would rather go farther away from the mana value of 8 He should have 8 tuplet strike. Well, he only has 4 robot arms, technically.
That's right, yeah.
So
but his
he
arms
should
legs,
have
though. At least
he
4.
Should have
he should have double strike,
quadruple
at least.
Strike, so that he gets last strike, regular strike, first strike, and double strike.
Beginning of combat on your turn, target non-creature artifact you control becomes an 8/8 villain. Types. It's so bad.
It is so bad. I mean, they're all so bad.
So there's 2 Spider-Man sets on Scryfall with no cards in them?
There's 2 Spider-Man sets on Scryfall with no cards in them.
Nice. Let's talk about 1 or 2 more cards
Let's get back to edging. Yeah, we should get back to edging real quick.
How many times did we make this joke?
Dude, it's never going to get old.
Why would you name it that?
I understand, like, what they're trying to evoke. I'm not going to finish the joke that I was going to make.
Thanks.
Dude, I don't even know that it's on Scryfall.
Is it not officially spoiled yet? What card are you talking about?
Here it is. I found it. Avendo, Waking Heaven. This is a land planet. This is a new land type that we're getting that have station, which is that crew mechanic at sorcery speed that we were talking about a couple weeks ago on the show.
It's kind of crew. It is crew, but it also adds station counters equal to the creature's power that stations it.
I think it's charge counters.
Charge counters. I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. It's charge counters.
But either way, yeah, you get counters and the counters stay, that which means you can proliferate those counters.
And they stay forever.
Which is very interesting, yeah. So the land enters tapped. You can tap it for green mana, and if you have 12 or more counters on it, for a green mana, you can tap it to add green for each creature you control.
So it's not exactly Gaia's Cradle.
It's not exactly Gaia's Cradle, yeah. No. And it's not legendary, which is interesting, yeah. Too.
I have no idea if this card is actually going to be good or not. We've seen so many powerful things come out of Gaia's Cradle decks recently. Not specifically on the show, but just in tournaments and in CH in general. That strategy has done a lot recently. I'm looking at anything that looks like a Gaia's Cradle right now. This one, you got to go through a lot of hoops. It comes in tapped. You have to have 12 power worth of creatures to make it go. You have to pay a green to activate it. Obviously, all of these things are true. But in the decks that are playing Gaia's Cradle, there's a ton of cards that untap lands. Snap, Cloud of Fairies, things like that are already going to untap it right away. You're already doing things like Earthcraft, where you're tapping a whole bunch of creatures to untap your lands again. So if you think of this kind of like the Earthcraft thing, where rather than tapping one at a time, you just have to tap all at once, and then you get the mana after you tap everything. There are going to be situations where you're going to have 12 power worth of creatures. The deck just like, those decks are made to put a whole bunch of power into play, but the ROG versions of this deck, obviously your commander won't have that power, and it will be tricky. And having a card like this, like a dead card in your deck, it is going to be detrimental if you can't get it working. But because it has such a high upside of being in a Gaia's Cradle, I think it's worth testing.
Like, there are scenarios where if something happens to your Gaia's Cradle, this could be a backup Gaia's right. Cradle that still lets you go through the Ouroboro Breeze Caller lines.
Bingo.
You just need the extra mana to get the activation, which a lot of times, like, you still have.
Right, yeah. Once you get it turned on, all of your lines are untapped lines, so you're not going to, like, bounce it to turn it off or anything like that. So once you get it going, it's a Gaia's Cradle. It's the same thing.
Plus, if you're in the Bant versions and you're playing Derevi in your deck, like, there's other ways then that you can, like, use your creatures to station, get a bunch of untaps in, and then still be able to untap and restation with, like, your big creatures while using your little creatures to get the untap effects. So yeah.
And what's the name of the 3-mana enchantment that flips into Gaia's Cradle?
Growing Rites of Itlamok.
If you had asked me 6 months ago if Growing Rites of Itlamok was a CDH card, maybe 8 months ago, I would have said no fucking way. That card sucks.
Never.
That's a casual card. But now I play it, and it feels really great every time I put it into play. I think Growing Rites is better than this card.
Oh,
weirdly.
I would agree, because when you cast Growing Rites, it replaces
it
itself in your hand. And
often
it flips on your end step in that same turn, so you can use it right away. Like, this will come in as a tapped land 100% of the time.
Also, more importantly, the Growing Rites, you don't have to actually expend any resources to flip it. You have to do what your deck already wants to do, which is just put creatures into play. Whereas this, you have to expend a resource of tapping a creature, which means that now I can't Enduring Vitality. That's the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
No, the one that allows your creatures to tap for a mana?
Correct.
Now it doesn't work anymore. Now my Earthcraft, those creatures can't be tapped to untap a basic land anymore. Now my Earthcraft is shut off. So I have to spend a real resource to like actually
to turn
get this
it on,
thing on.
Yeah.
Whereas the Growing Rites, the resource that I spent is a 3-mana initial investment and a card, which like you said, sometimes buys itself back. But the Growing Rites can be countered. This one can't.
That's the thing. You can just put this into play, and there are scenarios where, like, if you have those cards in your in play right now, you can just look at it as like, all right, well, the 12 was like the cost of me just to tap my Enduring Vitality like 4 times. So
right.
This means that it's technically like a 4-mana way to do this, but that might have also taken you at least 2 turns to be able to do with just that one creature.
Yeah.
But it might also depend, like, maybe your Yoshi is pretty big, or maybe you got something else going on. Maybe you don't have Earthcraft, or you don't have Enduring Vitality, and you just like need something to do with your creatures because you're not getting in for combat damage.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I definitely think that it's super close and it's worth trying. I'm not confident that it'll make the final cut. I shouldn't say not confident. I don't know what the right word is. Right.
I think it's at least
unsure.
Worth testing.
I think it's worth testing in those two guys, in the Rogthras and Yoshimar Thrasios. I think it's worth looking at.
I definitely think it's going to see a lot of play as it comes out, as people are going to try to figure out exactly how good it is. But I think it's going to end up being another one of these cards that are reserved for these Derevi untapped decks that can like really take advantage of creatures with like pretty decent power. They're going to be able to untap and like turn this on all in one turn so that your follow-up turn, this is nutty.
It's also important, you can't, you have to still untap it before you use it.
That's
so not
thing.
Only do you have to station it, but you also have to untap it. You have to expend two resources into untapping it before you turn it on.
Worst case scenario is too, station is a sorcery speed thing, so you can't like respond to someone doing something by stationing it then either.
Yeah, exactly. Silvala. I don't know why second card we talked about today versus Silvala, but I think this is a great Silvala card because they're playing Galta and all these other high power creatures to make Silvala big anyway. This feels like just a much easier turned on guy's Cradle and Silvala.
Well, yeah, I mean, a Galta alone just stations
turns it right
this
on,
right away.
Right?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So, and this card's going to be awesome in casual.
Phenomenal in casual.
Yeah, it's
going
to be super fun in casual. I'm thinking about it. Like, honestly, I'm thinking about it in my Tovalar deck, although Space Station doesn't really make sense, but I don't know. It feels like it might be.
It's still good.
It might be like a casual enough Gaia's Cradle that it's still like playable in casual decks and doesn't feel insane. But when you get to go through the hoops, it feels fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. And in casual, you'll play this on turn one and feel like insane then.
Yeah. And then it's just a quiet green mana for two or three turns and then eventually you turn it on.
And every creature that you play just stations it right away.
Boom.
Then.
Yeah, exactly. The sorcery speed does kind of stink. You can't hold up a blocker and then end step do it.
No,
that would
but
make
again,
it
like
good.
If you get it down early enough in the game, like especially in casual, that's when you're getting attacked the least. So in a deck like yours, where then on turn two you play a two power creature, then on turn three you play your commander, a three power creature, like that's seven counters on it right there.
Right, yeah.
Oh god, that's so much work. Oh, that feels like so much work all of
but
a sudden.
Honestly, a lot of the time Tovalar can't get in the early game anyway because people play down their little, you know, Baleful Strix or whatever like
so
that.
You want to have something to do with these creatures anyway.
Right, a lot of times I'm waiting for somebody else to attack, and then once you attack player B, now I can attack player one because you know what I mean? So I'm like waiting in those first few turns anyway with Tovalar. I don't know.
Is this a Disa card? Should I put this in Disa?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Your Tarmogoyfs will be...
Tap two Goyfs and
they'll be 6-7 pretty easy, right? Yeah, definitely a Disa card.
I could see this, I have six basic lands in my Hermit Druid deck.
Cut one of them.
I feel like, and that, you know, and a spoiler alert, because we're not gonna talk about these in the set review, but in the
these
commander
cards?
Decks... No, then what cards I'm about to talk about.
Oh, okay.
We're going to slowly get... finished cycles of dual lands that we're not getting in standard, but we are going to be getting in the commander product. So the premier ones for me are the two Golgari lands that we'll be getting.
Yeah.
One of them is one of the Tango lands, which are the...
If you can control two or more basics
that also have the basic land types, so
great
they're all fetchable.
Lands.
Yeah. And then the other one that we're getting
has cycling. The cycling for two mana one.
Which is also fetchable too.
And great in Disa too. I feel like any of those graveyard decks, it's nice to just move cards around to get what you want.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm very excited about like the addition of those and actually getting to finish cycles of lands that like we just never have had for some reason.
Are they're in the commander products?
They're only in the commander
products. Cool. That's
and
cool.
They're not finishing the cycle, importantly enough, either. Like we're getting the Golgari ones and maybe some others too, but not all of the enemy colors are gonna get them.
Yeah. Gotta keep people wanting.
Gotta keep
people
wanting. Yeah.
Should we talk about any more Edge of Eternity cards, or should we?
You know, like, three's a magic
three's
number.
A good number.
We should talk about one more edging card.
I want to talk about the tutor, the white tutor.
Yo, you know what? I took a picture of the white tutor on my phone the other day because I was like, I really want to talk about this card. That's the wrong. No, you know what? I'm thinking about the white Savine's Reclamation.
I just found it and then I pressed it and then lost it. Okay, are you ready? Starfield Shepherd is a 3/2 white, a 5-mana creature angel. It's a 3/2 with flying. And it says, whenever this creature enters, search your library for a basic plains card or a creature card with mana value 1 or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. But it has warp for 1 and a white. This is the first time we've talked about warp. Warp says sometimes different things, but this version of warp says you may cast this card from your hand for its warp cost, exile this creature at the beginning of the next end step, then you may cast it from exile on a later turn. So basically what this card is going to feel like is for 1 and a white, 2 mana total, you can search your library for a creature with mana value 1 or less, which is probably going to be Esper Sentinel or maybe Walking Ballista or something like that. Kind of some of the same things we were talking about for Tezzeret, this can find as well. The basic planes thing, I don't know how relevant that's going to be. Mono white decks are going to be thrilled to be able to do that sometimes, but I got to imagine Esper Sentinel is often going to be a better pick. And then sometimes if you make a bunch of mana, what have you got?
I was just tossing my hair.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like shaking your head like I got something wrong again.
No, no.
And then later on, maybe you never know, you can spend 5 mana and then recast it again, get another thing. This is another card that I'm weirdly thinking about for Yoshimaru Thrasios because this can find Esper Sentinel. I haven't put Magus of the Candelabra in the deck yet, but I want to.
Yeah.
And I think this might be a good one
to find
for that.
I was thinking, yeah, the non-black decks want this.
Yeah.
Because if you're in black, you just have way better tutors than everything else.
Yeah.
But like, this is like niche enough for non-black decks that like, there's real things that you might actually want to be able to find.
And it's two bodies for your Gaia's Cradle deck, which is nice. Later on, it's another two bodies for your Gaia's Cradle deck. You know what I mean? Not another, it's another one, but it's reintroducing one, and then you go find a second one.
Yeah, because when do you get rid of the card then?
After
you warp
step.
It? At your end step.
So it sticks around for your turn. So if you're untapping your Gaia's Cradle all turn, it's staying around and counting for all that. I don't know. I think this is kind of neat. I think this is interesting. It's a two-mana tutor. It can't find everything, but if you need to find the things that it looks for, like Esper Sentinel, like I think Esper Sentinel is just worth finding a lot of times. 3-mana Esper Sentinel is good.
You've been playing a lot of Wheeliod on the channel recently.
A little bit of it, yeah.
Is this something that would be good in Wheeliod? There's nothing in Wheeliod that you want that's a 1 or 0 mana thing.
There probably is that I can't think of right
maybe,
now.
Maybe some of those lists play Walking Ballista,
yeah.
And in theory you could get a mega
walking ballista yeah.
in.
I truly think like finding Esper Sentinel I think is going to be almost be enough. I mean, Ranger Captain does a lot more than just find the Esper Sentinel, but sometimes I feel like the fact that Ranger Captain can find the Esper Sentinel is half of its power.
And this is Esper Sentinel for a white colorless.
Right, so it's 1 mana less. You don't get the silence effect, which is huge, obviously, but you get the potential to find another thing later on. So like, I like the idea of like, early on, do this to find Magus of the Candelabra, play the Magus of the Candelabra pass, then next turn, get your Gaia's Cradle going, make a whole bunch of mana. Once you've made mana, cast this again, go find whatever, a Birds of Paradise, just to make your Gaia's Cradle a little bit better.
Mockingbird even.
Mockingbird
would
be so good.
There's so many things. We know from Ranger Captain that there's so many things that this can get.
Find Mockingbird, copy this, find something else. It's just like you chain your creatures together to make your Gaia's Cradle bigger and bigger.
I mean, even if we like hone in on like Selesnya, like, if you're, like, a Quirion Ranger deck, like, weirdly enough, this makes original Captain Sisay better.
Sure.
Because you can go find your untappers to, like, help you go through chains a little bit better.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think this is going to be great. It's just going to be good. It's several tutors and several bodies.
It's going to be solid,
solid.
It's never going to be your favorite tutor in the deck, and it's always going to feel a little bit too expensive on either side of it.
Yeah, 2 mana is still kind of a lot for
it's an uncommon,
this.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're specifically, like, not trying to make this exceptionally pushed, but it gets just enough things in the right color, which facilitates the right strategies enough that I think this is definitely considerable for non-black decks.
Yeah, especially if it can get card advantage, mana advantage, or a win con in
what
your deck.
What else do you need?
Right, like that's pretty much, it's gonna feel like a demonic tutor because you're gonna get whatever you want. Not anything that you want, but whatever you want. I need mana right now, I go get Birds of Paradise. I need cards right now, I go get Esper Sentinel. I need to win right now, I go get Walking Ballista. If that's true for your deck, this card feels really good.
So I love this one. I think this one's gonna be pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Not a
blue farm card, obviously,
no.
You know what I mean? But I think I'm going to try it in Yoshimaru Thrasios.
I think it's one of the better decks right there.
Yeah, and then other white decks I think should take a peek at this
should
one.
Should take a little peek, yeah. Real quick, before we get into the next card, I just wanted to jump in and give you a heads up that in a couple minutes, Dylan's microphone is going to start acting up, so there might be a couple of audio issues on his end for the rest of the podcast, but I did my best to make it sound as best as possible from there. I just wanted to address it before you start to hear the issues, just to make sure that you're aware and it doesn't catch you by surprise. Okay, back to it. Do you want to talk about some other cards that have been on my mind more recently?
Sure, yeah. Some not from new ones, just cards that you've been thinking about.
Just some other cards I've been
Give
thinking
it to
about.
Me.
Yeah. Here's one that I would like to talk about that we have never talked about on the channel before.
Okay. Is it an Itali card?
It is not an Itali card, no. Well, you know what? You could play it in Itali, but I think it would be a mistake to play it in Itali. So I think the name of the card, yeah, I got it right, is Reverent Silence. Do you know this one? That wasn't for you. That was for the audience. I know you know this one. This is 3 and a green for a sorcery that says if you control a forest, you may have each other player gain 6 life instead of paying Reverent Silence's mana cost. And you just destroy all enchantments.
This is a Glarb card.
This is a Glarb card.
A
yeah,
Glarb
this is
card.
Where I started to see it mostly because it's something that you can cast off the top with your Glarb to just get rid of all of the advantage pieces that are in play.
It's worthwhile to include options in your deck that can help get rid of the Rhystic Studies. I know there's a card that Rograkh Thrasios decks are playing.
Druid of Purification.
Druid of Purification. Yeah,
that card's nutty too.
Kind of a weird one, but sort of does a similar thing where eventually, basically what it does is blows up kind of all the Rhystic Studies normally.
I've seen that card in a Tali list too, like more mid-rangey Tali list. We'll run that as just a way to be like, I'm just going to get rid of everyone's everything.
Especially if your deck is like kind of like mono tutors, like a lot of these like guys, not mono, but like these guys' Cradle decks often tend to run a heavy amount of green creature tutors. All the green cards that search for a creature and put into play, they find it. So since you're running such a large swath of that, having a couple of those silver bullets is like really good.
I think what ends up happening a lot of those times is that you cast your Court of Calling and then someone draws into the counterspell then that like is going to stop your Court of Calling because you had to feed them the card.
Right.
But like this at least then gives you something where on your turn, you can put this on the stack first, see if you can draw out some interaction. And then if it resolves, then great. Now my Finale of Devastation for the win is going to work out here. Or like it can draw out the interaction that you need. And you can just go, all right, what are the odds you have the second one? Then you can at least still try after that.
Yeah. The Revenant Silence thing, I do think it's kind of specific to Glarb. Ad Nauseam has been like, I feel like a lot less in popularity recently.
Yeah, you're not really concerned about giving someone six life.
Yeah, but the issue is, in CDH, it is often better to join them rather than stop them. It is often just more advantageous for you, rather than getting rid of your opponents, all of their stuff. It's just better to push your own board forward. In Glarb specifically, it feels almost like a card draw because you get past it to see another card with Glarb. Glarb is also playing a decent amount of enchantments. It's playing counterbalance often. It's playing all the Rhystics and shit like that. And you don't really want to risk blowing up your own all the time. The Druid of Purification is a creature. It adds to your Gaia's Cradle count. It does other things that advance your board. I feel like it pushes your thing ahead.
And it specifically doesn't let anyone target your things. They can only target your opponent's stuff,
right,
too.
So something like Reverend Silence, it has to also push you ahead somehow in order for it to be good enough for you to play it like it does in Glarb.
Yeah, so I almost feel like it is like a better Atali card, a deck that needs to clear things that could get players too much advantage as I'm continuing to go through my line. I don't think I want to play it in Atali because there's also some enchantments that I want to have in play too, and it's not good to interact with your opponents in Atali in general unless you're getting rid of Dranith.
I could see it as like a late game way that like you haven't won on turn two or three and you're trying to wait till late game, but everyone has the Rhystic Studies and a bunch of mana, which is what's good against Atali. Because early Rhystic Study in Mystic Remora against Atali is okay. If you don't have the mana, you have to draw the free counter magic, which you only have 6 to 10 in your deck. But the Rhystic Study with 5 open mana, now all of a sudden, not only is every counterspell on in your deck, but every cantrip, every Thrasios activation can look for more stuff. So at the late game, the Revenant Silence, it can be really good. That's not what it's called. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, no, you got it right.
Got it right that time. The Revenant Silence, could be helpful in Atali of just like clearing your path in the end game.
Which then also makes sense as to why Glarb won. It because Glarb does not have quick wins. Glarb is waiting for the late game to be able to win, and so they kind of want things to be able to interact with the whole board in that case. But I don't know, I feel like this is way more of a TEDH card. Like this is not a deck that I'm just like putting in my deck and then just gonna have for every single pod that I want to go up against. And I think that you made a good point when you said I'd rather join them instead of try to beat them, because you do still feed all of the engines that you're trying to get rid of. So even though this is free, you're spending mana on Esper Sentinel triggers, which you don't get rid of, and then your Rhystic Study triggers that are still coming up.
They're gonna have to counter this spell too.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas something like a Mirror Maid, they oftentimes will feel like they must let that one resolve.
This one gets Flusterstormed and Mirror Maid doesn't.
Should we talk about what Mirror Maid does? It's for blue, generic. It's an enchantment that says when it enters, you can have it come in as a copy of an artifact or enchantment that anyone controls.
Super great in this format right now when we can copy Rhystic Studies and
the One Ring,
which is gnarly.
I've seen Mirror Maid be really great, and I think that is a better way to ensure that you will win more games of CD8.
Although I will say I can understand how there will be many times where Reverent Silence will feel like a silence on the stack. Because when no one has interaction and the only thing that they can do is just hope they draw into things as you're looping, you can blow up their options and then go, now you're not going to find what you need and I can just be free to do whatever I want.
It can be a tell. It can let you know, okay, my opponents would have countered that if they had a counterspell for it. So they at least don't have things that could counter that, which might let you know, not only can I go off because the Rhystics are gone, but I can feel a little bit more confident that there might not be a counterspell if they let it go.
It's like just Mindbreak Trap I need to worry about now.
Right, yeah, there are certain things that that won't work or whatever.
But that's like, that cuts down on so many things, which is like, which will feel very nice. So I'm a little torn on if like any other decks do want it besides Glarb, but it is something I have been thinking about a little bit more, especially as the meta, which by the way, are we getting more into mid-range hell or are we going away from mid-range hell? Because I feel like I'm hearing a lot of people still say that the meta is slowing down, but maybe it's just because I'm bringing a tally to tournaments, but I don't play past turn 3 or 4 ever.
Honestly, a lot of my games have also been very similar. I think there are some that do push very, very late, but even like the main late game is like turn 5 or 6 oftentimes. There is still like a decent amount of like grinding and stuff. Those games, in my experience, they just don't, because I don't talk very much. So I'm not facilitating games like that. I'm not facilitating situations like that. I'm making my opponents have it or not have it.
Me too, because I'm putting Natalie on the stack on turn 2.
I'm not seeing quite as much of that. And I think also a lot more decks are not trying to stop mid-range hell, but are instead trying to join mid-range hell. And what that looks like is just more gas. More gas means less interaction, which means everyone's trying to like mid-range hell it up rather than stop everyone. Everyone is just juicing their deck up more and doing more things to progress their deck towards
a win.
Which
to me though, that would make it sound like we're leaving mid-range hell, because instead of staying around and interacting with people, we're taking those cards out and we're putting in things that will make us go faster, will make us be more efficient and more synergistic.
I don't know if faster is the word I would use, I guess specifically. I'm saying like the guy's cradle decks that aren't necessarily fast, but they just go way over the top.
Okay, yeah.
What's over the top of mid-range? Like normally ramp beats mid-range, right?
Yeah, in 60 card formats, yeah, control and ramp normally ramp, beat mid-range.
Right, so like Tron and Primeval Titan decks stomp on Jund and Fair decks like that normally. They're just doing bigger things early.
Dude, I'm having PTSD flashbacks,
right? Yeah. So I think this is kind of the same thing as like, okay, what's the answer to mid-range? Ramp decks, guy's cradle decks.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So I think that's where we're at right now, which is more of the guy's cradle thing, which if there are 2 or 3 guy's cradle decks at the table, then the game gets insane because then both of them are doing crazy things and they go over top of each other. But oftentimes, I agree, the turns aren't lasting long. It's still ending on like turn 6. Just turn 4, 5, and 6 are like insanely long, crazy turns sometimes.
Yeah, this is why I think Itali is continuing to get better then too, because now there's less and less interaction that's being played in the format.
Which means you're not flipping into counterspells anymore. You're flipping, oh, it's another guy's
cradle. That's another action piece, okay.
Yeah, it's another tutor.
Ooh, I exiled your guy's cradle on the way to get the next card. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I certainly think Itali is more and more well-positioned recently. It's not exactly a cradle deck like these other Untappy cradle decks are.
It's just a go-over-the-top deck in
the same
way.
It's a go-over-the-top deck. Yeah, you want to do fair things and draw cards and not die and all that shit, and Itali's going to say, that's not
going
to be an option.
I'm just going over the top way sooner than Thrasios decks are able to go over the top, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's cool. Okay, so Reverend Silence, we're not huge fans of, I guess. I figured that would be the case. When I put it on the list, I thought we'd be bigger fans of it than we are.
It's a cool card and a nice one to have in the back pocket arsenal. I don't want to play it.
All right, I'd like to talk about a card that I put on the list when I put it in Itali, but I've taken it out of Itali since then, but I don't think that means that this is not a strong card. This is Emrakul, the Promised End.
Oh, yeah.
This is fucking crazy that this is a card that we're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
13 mana for a 13/13 Legendary Eldrazi that costs 1 less to cast for each card type among cards in your graveyard for your Delirium, basically.
Realistically, I've seen this normally cast for 7 or 8 mana. It could be less than that. It could technically, I think, be like 6. But I think like 8, sometimes 9 mana is normally how much the spell costs.
That would make sense to me, yeah. When you cast the spell, you gain control of target opponent during that player's next turn. And after that turn, that player takes an extra turn. And then this Emrakul has flying, trample, and protection from instants.
Yes. So from how I've seen this card play out and how it's described often is what it's doing is more or less it's thought of as an uncounterable win the game. If they counter the Emrakul, it doesn't matter. You still get the cast trigger. And taking control of somebody else's turn in CDH on turn 5, it is very likely that you will be able to have that player kill the table and then themselves while leaving you alive. There's so many weird things where if you can take control of a Kinnan player and you can have them do their Kinnan loop, you make them do the combo, you have the Kinnan bounce the other two players and their own permanence to themselves. So now all of their stuff is all bounced up, and then you do something else to fuck them all up, and then you have
they
your
have
turn.
To discard the hand size, and they put all of their good cards back in their graveyard.
And then you leave them with 7 lands for the next turn with no permanence in play, and they have 7 lands in their hand.
Thanks
or whatever.
For playing Tidespout Tyrant in your deck.
Yeah, or whatever. And then you get to go to your turn, and your opponents have no permanence in play or whatever. So like there are so many, all the infinite ways that you can use to win the game if you were deviously controlled by someone else can be used to fuck your whole life up.
Exactly. With infinite mana and access to every card in your deck, any deck can win the game. So it just kind of puts you in the scenario where now on that player's turn, you're you and them, which means that instead of having a 3v1 as one person's trying to win the game, it's now a 2v2 scenario, which completely changes the odds for you in your favor. Yeah.
Yeah. Even like the Thrasios decks have them draw most of their deck, somehow Finale of Devastation to kill the other two players, and then force Thrasios to draw their own deck and kill them.
There's always a player that you can target. You just have to be in a point in the game where it works out. Like we saw me flip into it in Itali on turn two.
On turn two, it's not great.
It's trash then, right?
Yeah. It's a mnemonic betrayal. This is a late game win
condition. It's a late game one card win condition that is bad in your opening hand.
It's bad in your opening hand.
Like mnemonic betrayal, yeah.
But it's good if you've run out of win conditions. Now you can get the win con from somebody else's deck.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, what else was I going to say? Yeah, like with Mnemonic Betrayal, you have to be at a point in the game where other players have already cast their win conditions and have been stopped. But with Emrakul, you get to be in a point in the game where no one has cast their win conditions because we're grinding through mid-range hell. Someone's waiting for a window, and you just get to say, your window's right now, and I'm taking the window instead.
Right, yeah. And then everyone looks at their hand that's full of counterspells, and the cast trigger's on the stack, and they can't do anything about it. They can try to stop you on when you're taking control of the next person's turn, but then you get to blow everyone's counterspells on their turn, right?
Exactly, which means that all of their good stuff gets stopped, which means that even though they get a turn after that, they don't have anything good for that turn.
They're out of win cons and the other players are out of counterspells. So I think this card is cool. I haven't found the greatest home for it. It sucks in your opening hand.
It sucks to see in your opening hand, yeah, when you're looking at a 7. I think it was better in the more mid-rangey versions of Itali, but I've since switched out a bunch of cards in my list to go a little faster as I'm trying to try that out a little bit. And this had to be one of those unfortunate cuts where, like, we realized on turn 2 this was not good. But when we saw Chad from Frozen Soul cast this in his, or from your deck.
Yeah.
Way later in the game.
Yeah, I was playing Emrakul. He Itali flipped into my Emrakul and then took your turn, I think.
And then was able to use Obnixilis to kill everyone else and then use my Necropotence to kill me. This is a wildly memorable card that really shouldn't work the way that it does in CEDH, I don't think. But I think it makes a lot of sense based on how win conditions in CEDH work, tutors in CEDH work, and like where the metagame is at right now specifically.
I totally agree. Should we talk about one more card? Because we talked about, I think we've only talked about 5 cards today, technically.
Jesus Christ,
We talked about 3 Edge of Eternity cards, right?
Yeah.
And then we have SOTAR talked about 2, not Edge of Eternity cards.
Why don't I give you this list? Do you want to talk about any of those cards, or is there another card on your mind you want to talk about?
A lot of the Yoshimaru Thrasios cards that I want to talk about are kind of simple, but Rhythm, is that what it's called? Nature's Rhythm Tutor is one that I kind of wanted to talk about, but I don't know if we'd have enough really stuff to say about it. The main thing that I wanted to talk about is it's another one of these Gaia's Cradle cards that is really good because the green on the backside allows you to a lot of times find just a win con if you Spellseeker for Nature's Rhythm, and then the Nature's Rhythm can go find your Derevi, and the Derevi can help you untap some lands, and then from your graveyard, the Nature's Rhythm can again go help you find Emil. You can kind of, from one Spellseeker, win the game going all the way the chain, and that has felt really, really good to me. That's not really enough to... Wait, that's it, though. That's all I got to say about
it's
that card.
It's not quite a one-card win con, because it still requires, like, Gaia's Cradle to be good. But with one card, you can go through this chain that gets you to the win. Yeah.
Once your engine is set up, once your Gaia's Cradle engine is set up, then any tutor can find Spellseeker, which finds this, which finds that, which finds that.
It turns Mystical Tutor into Nature's Rhythm, which makes Mystical Tutor then also like a one-card win con in your deck.
So just the fact that it's 2 tutors, which is, we talked about the Edge of Eternity, the white card, that card is also 2 tutors. That is really fucking good. And it's one of the reasons that I kind of really like the Yoshimaru Thrasios, because from what I'm thinking of right now, the Rog Thras decks, all of the combos, they require Gaia's Cradle, a creature, and then another land. There's not just 2 creatures that can help you win the game with Gaia's Cradle in the Rog Thras deck. I'm going to look at this list later. I'm going to tell you, oh, fuck, I was so wrong about that. I'm so sorry. But in the Yoshimaru deck specifically, not all the decks are playing this, but I'm playing Derevi and Emil, which makes this card specifically better because it can find both of those things.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think all these Cradle decks just kind of make you have to have like a bunch of things in play already. So they already feel like you need a lot in order to be able to go off with them.
But that's all the deck is. is. Creatures and ways to find Gaia's Cradle and interaction. That's
and it
the
does
whole
not
deck.
Feel hard to make sure that you have that.
Right, yeah. Just pretty consistently, like even like you're pretty consistently at 6 mana on turn 2, and then on turn 3, you have found a Gaia's Cradle somehow. There's 10 tutors in the deck that are going to find Gaia's Cradle, and you're going to mulligan for one of those cards every single game. It's like, you know, Rog'Sai finding Necropotence or Ad Nauseam. That's the strategy. That's all the deck does is find one of those cards.
You're going to play a lot of creatures that let you find
every single thing in the deck finds the cradle. That's the deck. And in the banned version, since that one was pretty quick, I can also talk about, why is the name escaping me? The banned tutor.
Wargate.
Oh my God. Wargate has been so cool and so good. The fact that for 3 mana, I can find Gaia's Cradle into play untapped is huge. And then I can find any one of the other combo pieces or any one of the value pieces, any permanent I can find. Wargate has been like the big pull to me for wanting to play Yoshimar Thrasios over Rog'Thras, which I don't know is right. Rog'Thras, I think, is probably better, but I like the style of Yoshimar Thrasios more because silence is really powerful and Wargate is busted.
I agree. Yeah. I'm going to sneak this last card in then real quick. Toxic Deluge is back. It's
fuck
good
no,
again.
No, we're cutting the podcast now. Don't talk about that card. No, no. Thank you so much for watching. If you like Sports Directly, you can do so on Patreon like our $100 patrons.
Damn Nandez, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Holding Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Connor Sifan, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Kwaja A. Hamid, Scott Hawken, Baby G-Bus.
Also, if you want to check out any of our merch, you can do that at PlayToWinMTG.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
Or listening. See you next time.
Hunter the Warlock, Major Tom, John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajou, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Justin Mansolo, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.